Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 17th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, so here we go. I'm recording this a couple days before it's going to broadcast, and 2 days after it broadcasts, I am going to the Lighthouse Center, and I am going to have my laminectomy disc decompression. Very excited, because I'm hoping to have a good outcome from that. I'm hoping I won't have too much pain. I will be resting. It's a possibility I'll have a week of encore show while I'm recuperating. I'm hoping the recuperation won't be too bad. I don't know what's going to happen exactly, but it's supposed to be a minimally invasive procedure and with good results. Everybody I know who's done it, everybody I've talked to who's done it, is really happy with it. My friend Stephanie, who's an acupuncturist, said she had a friend who had a laminectomy. She said, it was like a miracle. I don't know if it's going to be a miracle. I'm hoping that the pain and numbness in the lateral side of my left leg and the weakness in that leg is going to improve, and that'll have overall increased strength in both legs, because what's going on right now is there are structures that are sitting on the nerves that go through my lumbar spine and making it so that my spinal column can't talk to my legs the way that they're supposed to. They're talking pretty well because I still can ride my bike. I just can't ride hard or fast or far. So I have reduced strength, and I also have increased pain if I sit in that position for too long. So I did a slightly over 20 mile ride yesterday with over 1400 feet of almost 1500 feet of climbing, and that was hard, but I'm okay. I have found that if I use the special compression sleeves that center on my knees on both legs, that my body does pretty well with them. And so I will continue to use those as long as I need them. And I do recommend those. If you can find compression sleeves that are, they're stretchy, they have the right amount of compression, and they have bamboo as part of their matrix, I'm finding them that they're the best compression that I have used. I was using a neoprene compression sleeve on my knee last Wednesday when I rode my bike. On the other side, I was using one with copper in it, and my legs were not good afterwards. I had more inflammation in my knee, and I had soreness in my right leg. And so I put those aside, and I went back to the bamboo compression sleeves, and I'm very impressed with those. So I'm gonna keep using those. And if you can find some bamboo infused compression sleeves, I think they can be really helpful. My understanding is that they're going to just go in there, they're going to shave out some of the, there's calcifications in there that are pressing on my spinal column. If there's any disc fragments that are sitting around, they'll get rid of those, and it'll just help to open things up so that my spinal column has more room to move. It's very, very unlikely that I'm going to have a cerebral spinal fluid headache. I'm hoping that the anesthesia will be good so I won't have too much nausea, or maybe any nausea. I know that my mother doesn't do well with tramadol, which is a that's an opioid. I'm hoping I'm not going to need to use opioids, but you know, the last general anesthesia I had was 40 years ago, and I got very sick after that. And my mother did not get sick after her last surgery, and neither did Ron. So hopefully the anesthesia has gotten a lot better. They've got more of a handle on it, and they'll be able to take care of me, and the recovery won't be too bad. And I have to try not to get too anxious so my blood pressure stays reasonable the day of the surgery. So that surgery will be happening on September the 19th. So if you hold me in your thoughts, that would be great. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to folks visiting in the following week, maybe I'll get some gluten-free honey cake and some gluten-free challah, because the following week will be Rosh Hashanah. And so I'm going to stay here in my house and enjoy Rosh Hashanah. Thank goodness Temple B'nai Israel does Rosh Hashanah on Zoom, so I'll be participating that way. If I feel well enough to go, I might go, but I'm not counting on that. So I'm going to be all set up to do Zoom here. So that's what's going on with me. Ron is getting better and better. He gets sore at the end of the day. He still has to ice his neck and do a lot of stretching, but he is back to almost everything. He hasn't been cleared to do normal bike rides on the road as tolerated. He is teaching all of his classes, and so he's doing spin class, and he's doing yoga and his balance teaching, and he's back to working at the town, both for farm to families as well as the being the registrar of voters. So he's back to almost normal. He still doesn't feel like he's 100% through this because he still has soreness in his neck. But he manages it, and he gets rest, he does ice, he does the things he needs to do. The weather has just been gorgeous. We've just had this amazingly gorgeous late summer into early fall. And we've had so many days, we haven't had any incredible heat. I mean, it's maybe touched 80 degrees a few times, but it's mostly been in the 70s. And overnight, it's been the 40s and 50s, which is a long time ago when I was on WBLQ, there was a lady who used to call. She used to say, it's good sleeping weather. And it is good sleeping weather, because when it's nice and cool, it's easier to sleep. So you get better sleep when it's cool in the room. My understanding is that the ideal temperature for sleep is 65 degrees, and people disagree with that. I know Ron disagrees with that. It's too cold for him. But I sleep better when it's 65 or below in the bedroom. And when it gets up to 70 degrees, it's hard for me to sleep. I can do it, but the higher into the 70s it gets, I'm going to wake up sweating a few times in the night. So just gorgeous weather. I've been out on my bike on short rides. I went on a short ride today. I just went a little over 10 miles, and that's it. Tomorrow I might go a little bit longer, and after that I have one more day to ride, and then it's surgery time, and then I'll be off the bike until Dr. Lantner says you can get back on the bike. And I'm assuming that the first getting back on the bike is going to be downstairs on the Zwift. So that's all right. At least I have the Zwift. I enjoy the Zwift. As we say in Jewish, it's BVG. BVG stands for Besser wie gar nicht, which means better than nothing. And some people absolutely refuse to ride indoors. And I do not refuse to ride indoors. I like to have it as an alternative to riding outside. So if it's a day where it's pouring rain or extremely cold or the conditions just aren't good, I can ride indoors. Or say it's not going to be, a temperature I want to ride in until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I have stuff to do during the day, and it's, high 30s, low 40s in the morning, I'm going to get on the Zwift because it's just so much easier. It's, for a short ride to get all kitted up, it's not worth it for me. And it's easier to just throw on light clothes and go downstairs and get the workout done. And that's not for, it's only for good 3 months out of the year that it's like that. And I always watch the weather. If the weather is good enough for me to go out and the road conditions are okay, I'm going to go ahead and get on the road. If it's horribly icy out, of course, I'm not going to ride on the road. But if the road conditions are okay and the temperature is decent, it doesn't matter if it's February, I'm going to go out. So I watch the weather every single day opportunity to ride. So anyway, so that's what's going on. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about nutritional stuff today. I wanted to talk about whole milk versus low-fat milk and why they may or may not be good for you. So this is interesting. So first of all, dairy is fraught, and you may have heard me say this before. I just want to have the caveat of the only dairy that you're really supposed to consume is mother's milk before the age of weaning. So that means we should be consuming human milk until we are weaned, and then we never have to consume dairy again. If you never ate dairy again in your life, you would be fine. So you drink mother's milk when you are nursing, when you're a baby nursing, until you get weaned, whatever age that happens to be, 6 months, a year, 2 years. Some people go beyond 2 years, which is fine, and up to mom and baby. And then after that, if you never have dairy again, it's fine. We have only been consuming dairy from other species for the last 5 or 6,000 years, and we've been in this form as humans for about 200,000 years. So for 195,000 years, we didn't consume the dairy of other species, cows, goats, sheep. We had, and we were fine. We existed just fine. So if you never ate dairy again, you would be fine. So that's the cap. So the reason we consume dairy is because 5 or 6,000 years ago, we started animal husbandry, and somebody convinced a cow to stand still, and a goat, and a sheep, so we could milk it. And we decided that we could consume the dairy of these other species, and then we went ahead and did fun things with the dairy, like we fermented it, and curdled it, and turned it into cheese, and turned it into yogurt, and ultimately turned it into ice cream. And so we did all those things, and that all started about 5 or 6,000 years ago. Now, if you consume dairy and you feel happy and healthy and there's nothing wrong with you, then by all means consume dairy. So I'll talk about some of the pros and cons of dairy after we talk about the difference between skim and whole milk. So there's some studies recently that suggest that skim milk might not always be the best health-promoting choice. People think it is because it has much less fat, because fat is so bad for you. Fat, I don't believe that fat is bad for you. Though many official guidelines have long recommended avoiding whole milk, it can actually be a great addition to a nutrient-focused diet. So remember, I'm not 100% in favor of everybody drinking milk all the time. I've just seen, I know in my body, if I stay away from dairy, my body does better. Now, if you talk to Susan Weed believes that dairy is essential, that dairy is something you should be consuming. And then there are other, you know, there are other nutritionists who say that dairy is something that everybody should be consuming. But of course, I see people with food intolerances all the time. And I don't know how milk can be that good for you if everybody makes mucus when they consume dairy. When they consume dairy protein, it makes you get snotty regardless of whether you're allergic to it or not. Anyway, so according to what I'm reading here, it's naturally very nutritious, one of the most nutritious beverages on the planet, which explains why it's often a staple in school lunches and a popular drink for people of all ages. For many decades, nutrition guidelines have recommended low-fat dairy products for everyone over 2 years old. However, in recent years, scientists have called this recommendation into question. There's different types of dairy, whole, low-fat, and skim. So there's several types of milk available in the dairy aisle of the grocery stores, which differ in their fat content. Whole milk is sometimes referred to as regular milk because the amount of fat has not been altered. Skim and 1% milk are produced by removing fat from whole milk. The fat content is measured as a percentage of the total liquid by weight. So whole milk has about 3.25% milk fat. Low fat has about 1%. You can also get 2% milk. And skim has less than 0.5% milk fat, which means that skim milk can have a little bit of fat in it. It's not 100% fat free. If you want it to be fat free, it has to say in the container fat free. So skim can be less than 0.5%, which means that it can have 0.4% fat in it. So skim milk, so the calorie gradient is skim has 84 in a cup, and low fat has 106 in a cup, and whole has 152 in a cup. Skim milk is going to have more carbs in it. No, that's not true. Skim has a medium amount of carbs. The most carbs are in low fat milk somehow. And there's 13 grams in a cup of low fat, and there's 12 in a cup of skim, and then there's 11.5 in whole milk. It's not, the carb amount is not that much different, and the carbs are coming from the lactose, the milk sugar. There's protein. The protein is roughly the same. There's a tiny bit less protein in whole milk. There's 8 grams in a cup, whereas 8.5 in both skim and low fat. Then saturated fat, of course, the saturated fat grams is going to be the highest in the whole, at 4.5, and then followed by the low fat, and then followed by the saturated fat in the skim, which is going to be 0.1 grams, is very low. There's not a lot of omega-3 fatty acids in whole milk. There's only 0.04 grams. There's 0.01 in low fat, and there's none in skim milk. calcium, as in terms of calcium, there's only slightly more calcium in skim milk than there is in low fat and whole milk. 24 for low fat and whole, whereas 25% for of your RDA for skim. And then vitamin D, the most vitamin D is in skim milk. That's 14% of the daily value, 13 in low fat and 12 in whole milk. And then phosphorus, you're going to get the most phosphorus in skim milk. It's a water-soluble vitamin, water-soluble mineral. And they're not much less, 20% in your low fat and your whole milk. Since fat has more calories per serving than any other nutrients, milk with a higher fat content is higher in calories by a fair bit. So each type of milk has a similar amount of micronutrients. The amount of vitamin D can differ slightly, but most milk manufacturers add vitamin D to milk, so they all have a similar amount. That's why. So another nutritional difference between milk varieties is the amount of omega-3 fatty acids, which is a very beneficial type of fatty acid, and including heart and brain health, and also lowering inflammation. The more fat a cup of milk has in it, the higher the omega-3 content. Studies show that organic whole milk contains an even higher amount of omega-3s than regular whole milk. This distinction is mostly seen in grass-fed milk, which is almost always organic anyway. So if you're looking for higher omega-3s, make sure you're buying grass-fed milk, milk that comes from grass-fed cows. Okay, so is whole milk unhealthy? For years, nutrition guidelines have been instructing people to avoid whole milk, mainly due to the saturated fat content. Mainstream nutrition recommendations advise limiting saturated fat because it can increase cholesterol levels, which is a risk factor for heart disease. Based on the information, experts made the assumption that saturated fat must increase the risk of heart disease, but there's no experimental evidence to prove that it's true. In the 1970s, public policy was adopted based on the assumed connection between saturated fat and heart disease. As a result, official guidelines instructed people to reduce saturated fat intake. A cup of whole milk contains 4.5 grams of saturated fat, about 20% of the daily recommended amount for the 2020 to 2025 dietary guidelines for Americans. So the guidelines recommend consuming only low-fat or skim milk. In recent years, the recommendation has been called into question. There's emerging experimental data to indicate that eating moderate amounts of saturated fat does not cause heart disease. So here's the deal with saturated fat. While those with high cholesterol levels or heart disease may need to defer to their doctor's recommendation and monitor intake of saturated fat, it can still be enjoyed as part of a balanced diet for individuals without cardiovascular disease. Again, that's been called into question as well. Originally, research believed that saturated fat increased cholesterol levels, which in turn increased the risk of cardiovascular disease. But the relationship between saturated fat and cholesterol is more complicated. Although saturated fat does increase levels of LDL, it also increases levels of HDL, which can actually help protect against heart disease. Additionally, there are different types of LDL, and it's the very small, you've heard me say this ad nauseum, the very small dense particles of LDL that have the most damaging effect on the heart and arteries. Though saturated fat can increase cholesterol levels, it actually changes LDL from the small dense particles to the large, less harmful particles. Furthermore, other research suggests that certain foods high in saturated fat may impact heart health differently. There was a review that showed that cheese and yogurt were actually linked to a lower risk of heart disease, while red meat and butter were tied to a higher risk. For this reason, it's important to consider the overall nutritional composition of an ingredient than focusing solely on the individual nutrients it contains. Even though a lot of new research is questioning the direct connection between saturated fat and heart health, it still can increase cholesterol levels in some individuals. Therefore, those with heart disease or high cholesterol levels may want to consider swapping out foods in high in saturated fat for other ingredients instead. And that's when I turn around and tell people to eat their MUFAs, their monounsaturated fatty acids, your nuts and seeds, your avocado oil, olives and their oil, nuts and seeds and their butters, and raw organic non-alkalized cocoa, whether in powder or in nibs. So when you replace saturated fat foods with whole grains or polyunsaturated fats, which is a type of fat found in olive oil, nuts, and seeds, could be beneficial for long-term heart health. So in terms of whole milk and weight management, Many people avoid drinking whole milk because they think the extra fat and calories will cause them to gain weight. But many studies have shown that consuming high-fat dairy products may actually help support weight management instead. There was a 2016 study of over 18,000 women which showed that increased intake of full-fat dairy products was linked to a lower risk of weight gain over an 11-year period. On the other hand, there was no significant association between low-fat dairy intake and weight gain. Another study from 2017 found that dairy fat intake was not linked to a higher risk of weight gain, heart disease, or type 2 diabetes, and there was a 2020 review of 29 studies that concluded that full-fat dairy consumption was not associated with weight gain or fat gain in children. The relationship between milk and weight management has been a research topic for several years. Findings have been inconsistent, however, most of the studies either include all types of dairy products or focus on low-fat dairy. In studies that look at only high-fat dairy products, like whole milk, there's a pretty consistent connection between full-fat dairy and lower body weight, suggesting that whole milk can be a great addition to a well-rounded, nutrient-dense diet and may help you maintain a moderate rate. So, can whole milk lower your risk for chronic disease? So there are certain chronic conditions that have been shown to be lowered by whole milk. One of them is metabolic syndrome, which shows that drinking whole milk may be associated with a lower risk of metabolic syndrome, a group of risk factors that increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. Then type 2 diabetes. In one large study, people with the highest amount of dairy-derived fatty acids in their bloodstream had a 44% lower rate of diabetes. But there's more research needed because there are studies that find that full-fat and non-fermented dairy products have a higher risk. Infertility. Although much research is needed, some studies suggest that drinking milk may be associated with improved reproductive health and fertility in women. It's important to note that many other factors such as physical activities, daily diet, personal health history, all play a role in the development of chronic disease. Therefore, drinking whole milk is only one small part it's one small part of a larger equation. So the advantage of choosing skim milk, it might be the best choice for you if you're following a very low calorie diet, because it definitely has less calories. Skim milk is also considered a nutrient dense ingredient. It provides a large dose of vitamins and minerals with few calories. Skim milk is one of the richest food sources of calcium, providing around 325 milligrams per cup, and that's higher than the calcium content of whole milk, which is 306. That's not that different. It can be a great way to increase intake of vitamins and minerals like vitamin D, phosphorus, and potassium. So one of the main reasons whole milk was called out was because of the saturated fat content, which was previously directly connected to issues like heart disease. However, new research questions it directly. While individuals who are already living with high cholesterol and heart disease should defer to their doctor's advice and maybe limit their intake of saturated fat, people without such conditions may be able to consume it in moderate amounts without impacting overall health. Always talk to your doctor about what the best option for you is. So as a naturopathic physician, I have concerns about telling people to consume lots of dairy. If a person consumes dairy and they are happy and healthy and their blood values of all kinds of things are normal, then I say have at it. It's better if it's organic. It's even better if it's grass-fed. There is definitely health-promoting benefits to eating cheese, especially if it's cheese from grass-fed animals, because you're going to get more nutrients like vitamin K2, which is good for your bone health. It's good for preventing cardiovascular disease. And you're also going to get more conjugated linoleic acid. So when you eat dairy from grass-fed animals, there's more conjugated linoleic acid in it. And conjugated linoleic acid helps to regulate cholesterol, and it helps to regulate weight. In fact, you can buy conjugated linoleic acid supplements, and they don't seem to work as well as if the conjugated linoleic acid is in the animal derived food. So you get your CLA from whole grass-fed cheese and grass-fed milk, and also grass-fed beef. You're going to get more CLA if the animal has been eating a diet that is if they're solely grass-fed and finished. So that's one issue. So if a person does well with dairy, I'm not going to tell them to stop eating dairy. If their cholesterol is through the roof, and especially if they have small dense LDL, I'm going to tell them, one of the things I might have them try is to cut back on dairy fat. The other thing is, if somebody has high cholesterol and I see that they have an elevated TMAO, So that's TMAO is will elevate if you eat a lot of animal protein, and if you have high cholesterol in relationship to that, and you also have high TMAO, I might have them cut back on beef and also dairy protein. If they're not eating a lot of beef and a lot of dairy and they're eating a lot of fish, there's a lot of TMAO in fish. So then you just leave it alone. So you don't tell everybody the same thing. The other issue is I have so many women come in. I mean, I'm sure men come in as well, but it's mostly the women who are complaining about this is hormonally based acne. And especially if the acne is perioral, that it's happening around the lips and it's around your mouth. If you have perioral dermatitis or perioral acne, or you're having cystic acne that you can't seem to get rid of and you're eating a lot of dairy, I will often tell people to come off dairy. The problem with dairy is there's nothing you can do about the fact that it is in fact filtered cow's blood or filtered goat blood or filtered sheep blood. So even if the animals have not been given any hormones, there's going to be some hormones in it. The higher the fat, probably the more hormones are going to be in it, because your cow hormones are fat soluble. So if there's more fat in it, there's more places for the hormones to be emulsified. So higher fat dairy is going to have higher hormones in it. On the other hand, you're going to have somewhat more casein and whey in skim milk, only because you're taking the fat out, so there's more liquid, and the proteins are water soluble. So casein and whey both increase insulin. When you have higher insulin, they increase androgens, and androgens are what leads to increased sebum production. The oil that comes out of the oil glands in your face or your back or wherever you're getting the acne. And then once you have that excess production of sebum, you get bacteria, particularly propionibacteria, that live on your skin, and they start munching on that oil, and your body goes, no. And your inflammatory white blood cells go after the propionibacteria. Now you have inflammation, now you have acne. So some people, they can't tolerate the hormones that are in the dairy. Now, is it just the dairy, or is it the fact that we live in this biochemical soup that there are xenoestrogens in the environment, xeno meaning foreign, estrogens in the environment, dioxins from bleach, from paper, and there's, estrogen-like compounds in the plastics that we use. So there's a lot of ways we wind up getting xenoestrogens into our body. And then if you top that off by consuming dairy, which has cow animal estrogens in it, now your estrogen levels are too high. And you also have the situation where you have the casein in the whey increasing insulin, which is going to produce more androgens, and the androgens are going to overproduce the sebum. So estrogen doesn't necessarily increase the sebum, but what it will do is increase, if it's unopposed by progesterone, or if you're relatively estrogen dominant, relatively meaning your estrogen may not be at abnormal levels, but your estrogen is high relative to the amount of progesterone that you have. And people who are stressed, that's generally the case. They tend to be estrogen dominant because progesterone can be easily turned into cortisol, and people tend to be progesterone deficient. That's one of the things that causes people fertility problems, increased inflammation, irritability, moods, endometriosis, adenomyosis, just painful periods. When you tend to be estrogen dominant, those are more likely to happen when you're progesterone insufficient, which can happen if you're stressed. And also, if your hormones are out of balance, you may not ovulate every month. So I have to talk to people about these kinds of things. And dairy, when people are having hormonal issues, one of the things I tend to do, you have to talk to them about definitely sugar, alcohol, and dairy, and maybe gluten too, and excessive grains in general. But definitely alcohol, sugar, and dairy, because all of those things will raise your insulin. And when you raise insulin, you're going to raise your androgens, and then you're going to get the inflammatory issues that come with the raised androgens. And if you're relatively estrogen dominant, which can happen from consuming dairy, then you're not going to have adequate progesterone. And progesterone's job is it makes a comfortable bed for the for the embryo to implant, but it also helps to regulate your periods. It helps to keep you calm, helps to keep inflammation at bay. Estrogen is a proliferative hormone, so it causes things to grow. So it causes swelling. It can cause overgrowth of various tissues, including endometrium. If you tend to have endometriosis, you can have overgrowth of tissue, endometrial tissue outside your uterus. If you have adenomyosis, where you have the overgrowth of glands inside the uterus, they can overgrow. And when you have that, that also causes pain and discomfort with menses, and you can get ovarian cysts as well, where the follicles just don't stop growing and they become big painful cysts that sit on structures and give you pain. So when people have those issues, I tend to tell them not to have dairy. And the other thing with dairy is it's often, because it's mucogenic, it can lead to a higher rate of and higher incidence of allergic rhinitis, you know, respiratory conditions. So if you have hay fever, if you are allergic to dust, mold, pollen of any kind, whether it's trees in the springtime or like right now, we have grass and ragweed out there right now and other weeds. And then we're starting to have plants die back. So there's mold and people are reacting to all of those things. If you take dairy out, dairy is mucogenic, even if you're not allergic to it. You'll have less mucus and you'll probably be more comfortable. And people can be allergic to dairy and they can have an allergy to dairy that is IgE, immune globulin E, where it's the antibody that fights, the kind of antibody that gives you allergic rhinitis, that gives you asthma, and also tends to give you hives. You can have that kind of allergy. I tested myself recently. I don't have that. I haven't done the IgG, which I might wind up doing, but IgG is the long term where you eat dairy on Monday and you might have symptoms on Thursday, and it takes longer to get out of your system. You have low grade inflammation as a result of consuming the dairy. And if you're concerned about whether you have a dairy problem, it might not be enough to just do IgG for cow's milk. You might also want to check IgG for sheep milk as well as goat milk and see if those are as problematic for you as cow's milk. And the other thing is not just to check off the cow's milk IgG, but also to check casein IgG and whey IgG. Because you can have a few antibodies to cow's milk, but that's not as concerning as the allergy to casein and whey. Casein and whey are the specific proteins in dairy. So now I've taken to not, like, if I'm going to do one IgG test for my patients, I'm not doing cow's milk, I'm doing casein IgG. And if they have a casein allergy, I'll talk to them about whether they should do a trial of avoiding dairy and see if they feel better. Again, on the one hand, dairy can be extremely nutritious, especially if it comes from grass-fed animals. I tend to like the idea of it being raw. I mean, there's controversy about it being raw because when you pasteurize dairy, on the one hand, yes, you are killing certain microorganisms, but on the other hand, you're heating up those beneficial essential fatty acids, which can render them, give them free radical liability. So, when a calf nurses, you don't pasteurize the milk. It just drinks it right out of the animal. So if you have clean conditions, generally there's not going to be bad bacteria in that dairy. But if you're concerned about that, then by all means get pasteurized. Get grass-fed, but get pasteurized if you need that. And you can get 100% grass-fed cheese from grass-fed animals. It's funny to say grass-fed cheese because you're not feeding the cheese grass. You're feeding the cow grass. So when the cheese tends to be grass-fed, I do better with it. I don't do 100% well with it. In my quest to get my blood pressure down, I've avoided dairy and gluten and sugar. And my digestive system definitely does better if I avoid dairy. If I eat dairy for a few days running, I'm going to have some issues in the bathroom. So, things don't work as well. They don't come out as well. And anyway, I won't get into it too much. But I definitely have better digestion when dairy is not in the equation, and I'm perfectly healthy without the dairy because I eat all kinds of other foods, all kinds of fruits and vegetables and other protein. Anyway, so should you consume dairy? The bottom line is, if you eat dairy and you feel good and your blood levels of stuff are good, you're at a good weight and you feel happy and healthy when you eat dairy, then eat dairy. It's better to eat it organic. It's better to eat it grass-fed. It's going to be more nutritious if it's grass-fed. If you, and then if you're worried about cholesterol, that you have to go, we have to work with a practitioner who can look at your cholesterol levels. And it's a really good idea to get that test where they're talking about how saturated fat raises the size of your LDL particles. That is actually helpful. You want to have large, buoyant LDL, and saturated fat will help to raise the size of those particles. But so will MUFAs, monounsaturated fatty acids, which are, MUFAs come from plants. And that's your olives and olive oil and your raw organic unsweetened cocoa powder and nibs and your nuts and seeds and their butters, as long as they're not rancid, and olives and olive oil, and avocados and avocado oil can all help to raise the size of your LDL. And then when your LDL is bigger, it can't get stuck in between the cells of your arteries. And you're going to tend to have less likelihood of atherosclerosis. Also, if you have higher HDL, and HDL can rise from saturated fat, from monounsaturated fat, and also from cardio exercise. You'll have more HDL if you have if you get regular cardio exercise. The thing is that some people just have a hard time making HDL. And I'm fortunate that I am not one of those people, but there's a genetic component to it. I've seen people who exercise a lot and they just don't, they're not good at making HDL. So you have to watch them for cardiovascular disease over the course of their life. That's the ones you want to send for a calcium scoring test to see if there is a calcium burden in their arteries. So it's all very interesting. Eat dairy if you have to talk with a holistic practitioner about it. I wouldn't just say go ahead and eat dairy if you're happy and healthy. You want to get all your blood values checked, and you know, if you're concerned about your weight, talk that over with your practitioner. But I think that the lipoprotein fractionation test is very useful, because I like to do lipoprotein fractionation, and I also like to do oxidized LDL. And also lipoprotein little a and apolipoprotein B. And these are all various factors that your average doctor doesn't check, that I like to check. And, you know, if somebody has high, if somebody at first lipid screening that I do, they come in and they're at a good weight, and I check their cholesterol, and they have low triglycerides, high HDL, and low LDL, and a reasonable total cholesterol, I'm probably not going to go do further testing. But if somebody has any kind of elevated LDL, so, and by elevated, I mean, you know, when we're getting into the 120s, 130s and above, I'm going to start checking the other factors. And so then we see what those factors are, and then we make lifestyle modifications. Remember, the big thing that can help with everything is stress reduction. So deep breathing, relaxing more, doing less work, or taking breaks from work. You know, doing restorative activities like your deep breathing, your meditation, your yin and restorative yoga, or just any kind of yoga. Probably not Bikram or power yoga. Those are not really restorative. But you know, gentle yoga, yin yoga, restorative yoga, yoga nidra. Those are all restorative activities. And you know, when you do a lot of deep breathing and relaxing, you lower cortisol. Remember that when your cortisol is high, cortisol's job is to run around your body, look for stuff to break down, turn it into sugar so that you can run away from the bear. So the more cortisol you have, the more blood sugar you're going to have. The more blood sugar you're going to have, blood sugar is going to get turned into either triglycerides or ultimately into cholesterol or get stored as fat. So the more stressed you are, the less stressed you are, the better your cholesterol is going to be, the better your blood sugar is going to be, and the less you will weigh. So stress reduction, I tell people, it's the most important part of fat loss. If you want to lose weight, stress reduction is number one. I have a weight loss handout that I hand out to my patients, and the first two items on it are about stress reduction. Because stress reduction, everything follows. You lower your cortisol. When you are less stressed, you make better food choices. You make better choices about rest and exercise. So everything follows from that stress reduction. And included in the stress reduction is getting adequate sleep. And that's on the handout as well. And sometimes it's better to get more rest and sleep than it is to go out and do a bout of exercise. That there always has to be balance. Like you shouldn't stress out to work out. And you definitely want to work out, but you shouldn't stress out to work out. And if you're exhausted, you may not want to work out that day. It's maybe better to do some gentle yoga or deep breathing or just read a book, you know, something like that, and drink a cup of calming tea. So, all right. So that was a big lesson on milk. So let's talk about plant-based dairy substitutes, because here I am telling you to, maybe you don't want to do so much dairy, but let's compare some dairy substitutes. So milk and milk alternatives have varying amounts of calories and nutrients like protein and fat. Cow's milk and soy milk typically contain the most protein. So that's the thing. Dairy substitutes aren't necessarily that great for you. Like drinking coconut milk is not as good for you as eating coconut. Drinking almond milk is not as good for you as eating almonds. Drinking cashew milk is not as good for you as eating cashews. So the thing is, these food substances, these dairy substitutes, are low in calories, and they do have some nutrients in them, but they really are not as nutritious as animal dairy. So, but the thing is, if your digestive system and your cholesterol and your whatever is going to make it so that you can't do dairy, you know, you have asthma from dairy, you know, you can't breathe, or you have allergic rhinitis from doing dairy, and you want to enjoy things that taste creamy, that's my situation. If I'm going to go get a latte, I'm going to get a dairy substitute because I'm not going to feel good if I have real milk. So I went to Starbucks yesterday. I had an almond milk latte. I had an almond milk matcha latte. And I flip around between the different dairy substitutes. I like almond. I like cashew. I like coconut. I like hemp. And they all differ. I don't tend to do soy, because I don't think it tastes as good. And, it does have a lot of phytoestrogens in it, which is probably fine for me because I'm a postmenopausal woman. And so I could probably use the phytoestrogens to help with menopausal symptoms, but I don't tend to consume soy milk. When I consume soy, I keep toasted edamame, and I snack on that. I don't have that every day. And I'll have edamame sometimes, and sometimes we'll have tempeh, and sometimes we'll have tofu. But we don't have that a lot. We don't have that most of the time. That's not a go-to for me. But when I eat it, I enjoy it. We have it sometimes in the winter. So not too long ago, the only thing you could drown your cereal in was whole cow's milk. Now cow's milk comes in varieties. There's whole milk, 2%, 1%. And what we didn't talk about was A1 versus A2 milk. And so A1 milk comes from the hybridized cows, modern cows, and the A2 milk comes from cows. And they have the protein in A2 milk. Tends to be more tolerated by a lot of people. So Jersey cows, the brown ones, they make A2 milk. Where Holsteins, when you go up to Stearns Farm, or you go to Pomfret, you go to We Like It, you go to, you know, most of the dairy farms around here, you're going to see Holsteins. And those are the cute cows they're white with big black splotches on them. You know, the ones you associate with being basic cows. But I remember I was on a bike tour, and we stopped at an ice cream stand on this bike tour. Cannot remember where that was. Might've been Maine. I'm not sure. But they had Jersey cows, and you could see the cows in the field, and they were brown. They were this lovely tan, and all the milk came from those cows, and they made A2 milk. So we had A2 milk ice cream. So I might try A2 milk and see if I tolerate it well. However, when you don't want to do dairy at all, there are alternatives to cow's milk. Almond, soy, rice, coconut, they're not talking about cashew, hemp. They're available in most stores in the United States. And of course, also goat and oat. Goat and oat milk rhyme, huh? They could be good choices. every type of milk has its advantages and disadvantages, depending on your diet, health, nutritional needs, taste preferences. Some people might be intolerant to dairy milk and may need to choose a plant-based alternative. And those who need to boost their calorie intake may want whole milk. However, whole dairy milk and full-fat coconut milk are both rich in fat and calories, which can be taken into account if you need a lower-calorie beverage. Whole cow's milk contains more calories and saturated fat than any other milk aside from goat's milk. So there's differences in different dairy alternatives. So the highest calorie milk is going to be your whole milk, followed by rice milk. And rice milk is also the highest in carbs by far of all of the milks. That's why I don't tend to recommend rice milk. Why do you want to get your carbohydrates from your dairy substitute? So there's so much less carbohydrate in it. There's barely any, unless the dairy's alternative is sweetened, there's the carb level is in the single digits. I mean, if you're going to get your carbs from that beverage, it might as well be from, like, if you're getting a latte from your favorite cafe, let the sugar be in something you add if you want to, and not in the dairy substitute. So I don't tend to recommend rice milk just because it has so many carbohydrates and sugars in it. It has a little bit of fat. So my favorites tend to be whichever you prefer, among almond, coconut, cashew, hemp. Those are the ones I like. And you can get some more exotic ones. You can get hazelnut milk and you can get macadamia milk. And I've had those too. So whole milk has the highest fat content of all the milk and the most calories per cup. It has 12 grams of carbohydrate as lactose, 8 grams of fat, and 8 grams of protein. And none of the milk's natural components are removed. So there's fat and calcium, there's vitamin A and D. Other cow's milk has the same amount of carbohydrates and protein, with some or all of the fat removed. So that's going to reduce the calorie, and we already talked about that. So the pros of cow's milk is that it can give you essential proteins, fat, calories, vitamins, and minerals. And you can get lactose-free versions, and grass-fed and low-heat pasteurized options are available in grocery stores and convenience stores. The cons would be that it's whole milk is high in calories and fat if that's a concern for you. If you're lactose intolerant, it won't work for you. And some people have ethical concerns about dairy farming practices. And you can get ethically raised milk that's from ethically raised animals. That is possible to do. And the other alternative that's not mentioned here is that people can be allergic to it. They can have digestive upset. They do talk about lactose intolerance, but they don't talk about the intolerance to the dairy proteins. So almond milk is made from ground almonds and filtered water. It contains some starches and thickeners to improve the consistency and shelf life. If you have an allergy to almonds or nuts, you can't have it. Then that's true of any of these dairy alternatives. If you're allergic to something that's in it, don't have it. It's lower than calories than other milk if it's unsweetened and has no saturated fat and is lactose free. So it has 30 to 60 calories depending on whether it's sweetened, 1 gram of carbs, 3 grams of fat, and 1 gram of protein. So it's low calorie. Often it's fortified with A and D. It's vegan and naturally lactose free. Remember, most of these dairy substitutes are not good sources of protein. It might have carrageenan. You can get dairy substitutes that are free of carrageenan. Carrageenan is an algae. It's an algae derivative which acts as a thickener. It gives it better mouthfeel, and you can get carrageenan free dairy substitutes. And then there's issues about the amount of water used to cultivate almonds. The thing is, they grow almonds in California, which they shouldn't be doing. I mean, if you grow it in the desert and then you have to irrigate, that's silly. My PCP, Dr. LaGuardia, he said that he's growing hazelnuts on his property. He says they grow easily. Almonds and hazelnuts, so they grow hazelnuts in Oregon, and that makes sense because they're growing them in the Cascades where there's tons of water. It rains all the time there, and they're very happy. A long time ago, when I was in Nova Scotia, there was a couple that came to see me who was going to start almond farming in Nova Scotia, which again makes lots of sense because lots of rain. Why wouldn't you grow these water-needing nuts in a place where it rains a lot? That makes the most sense. So I think you could probably grow nuts in New England, and I don't know if some people are doing that, but there's this big almond industry in California, which requires a lot of water, a lot of irrigation. Then there's soy milk. It's made from soybeans and filtered water. A cup has 80 to 100 calories, 4 grams of carbs, which is great, 4 grams of fat, and it's probably monounsaturated fat, 7 grams of, which is a lot of protein, because soy has a lot of protein. No cholesterol, no saturated fat. It's going to have some sterols in it, which helps to lower your cholesterol, and it's a good source of protein, calcium when it's fortified, and also potassium. And it can be fortified with B12 and D as well as calcium. Has as much protein as cow's milk and much lower in calories, little saturated fat. The con, of course, is that you can be allergic to it for adults and children. Most of the soy in the United States is GMO. It's genetically modified. So if you're going to get soy milk or soy products in general, it's a really good idea to make sure they're not GMO, genetically modified. Rice milk. It's made from milled rice and water. It contains additives for consistency and shelf stability. It's the least likely of milk products to cause allergies because no nuts. So if you're allergic to milk, soy, or nuts, you're probably going to do okay with it. You can get quinoa and flax milk. They're hard to find, but they are available. And you might be less likely to be allergic to those as well. Rice milk has a lot of calories, 120 calories, 22 grams of carbohydrates, 2 grams of fat, and very little protein. That's why I tend not to recommend it. It can be fortified with calcium and D. It's not a natural source of either. Then there's the inorganic arsenic issue that can be found in rice. And you shouldn't rely solely on rice and rice products for infants, children, and pregnant women. And the American Academy of Pediatrics agrees with that too. So it's the least allergenic, can be fortified for A and D. It's naturally sweeter than other milk alternatives, but it's remarkably high in carbohydrates. And so I don't want carbohydrates in my dairy substitute. I'd rather have control over the carbohydrates in other things. So eating too much of a rice product can pose health risks for infants and children because of the inorganic arsenic. Then there's coconut milk. It's made from filtered water and coconut cream, great from grated mature coconut flesh. Coconut is actually not a nut. So people with nut allergies should be able to have it safely unless you have an actual coconut allergy. As with other plant-based milk alternatives, coconut milk often has added thickeners and other ingredients. It contains more fat than the other milk alternatives, but it's good quality fat. It's usually medium chain triglycerides. So there's about 50 calories in a glass of coconut milk, which is great. 2 grams of carbs, 5 grams of fat, and no protein. It doesn't naturally contain vitamin A, calcium, or D, so it has to be added. It's safe for most people with nut allergies and can be fortified. It isn't a good source of protein, and you have to watch out for the carrageenan. All right. And so those are some of the dairy alternatives. Let me see if anything else for you. Yeah. So let's see. Let's do this one. All right. So I think I did that one already. And here, this one. Okay. And so, yeah. So I think we've talked out as far as dairy alternatives go. All right, so we're going to talk more the next time I'm live about fish oil, and we can start a little bit on fish oil. I'll get going on that now. Why is fish oil so good for you? Fish oil. By the way, I have to stop taking my fish oil until I have my surgery, and Dr. LaGuardia says 2 days after my surgery, I can go back to taking the fish oil. I'm starting to feel a little bit creaky, I think, because I had to cut way back on the magnesium. I'm not taking fish oil or eating all my oils because they can help to thin your blood, and they don't want my blood to be too thin because they want me to clot after they, you know, do the surgery on me. But there are a lot of benefits for fish oil because they're a great source of omega-3 fatty acids, which is good for your heart and brain. Getting your omega-3 from fish is healthier. If you don't eat fish, fish oil is a good alternative. And I do both, because I don't eat my smash fish all the time. But I'm trying to eat more smash fish. I think I talked about what smash fish are last week. I learned the acronym SMASH, I think, 2 weeks ago, which is hilarious. So, what are smash fish? It bears repeating. It's not fish that you smash, although you can smash them if you want to, I suppose. But SMASH is an acronym, and it's a great acronym for fish that you eat that are high in omega-3 fatty acids and low in mercury and other toxins. So SMASH stands for salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. And a lot of these are come prepared. You can get a lot of these things in tins or cans. So you can get canned salmon, you can get canned mackerel. Not a big mackerel fan, but that's okay. I happen to love anchovies, and Ron is not a big fan of the anchovy. It's a little cured stinky fish, as far as he's concerned. I also like sardines. He also considers it to be a stinky fish. So I don't eat sardines a lot, only because I'm usually eating with Ron, and he doesn't want to eat them. And I'm afraid to take sardines to the office because I eat my lunch in my office where patients come, and they are so stinky, I'm afraid they're going to stink up my my room. I do eat a little bit of tuna, and I do eat salmon in the room because they're just not as pungent as the sardines. But the cool thing about sardines is the thing about these fish is they're small. The thing with salmon can be very large, but they don't spend a lot of time in the ocean, so they're less likely to pick up mercury. They spend a lot of time in fresh water, but they do have a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. Mackerel are small, anchovies are very small, sardines are very small, and herring are small. Herring, you usually get your herring pickled in some kind of brine, so that's what I have. I have pickled herring in the house right now, or I get herring in wine sauce, which is pickled and it's in wine sauce. So I'll have a little bit of herring with my lunch, and that's how I'll consume it. So if you eat those fish, so the other thing is the recommendation is if you have fish 2 to 3 times a week, especially smash fish 2 to 3 times a week, you're going to get an adequate amount of essential fatty acids. I don't always do that, so I take fish oil every day. I want the extra essential fatty acids to reduce inflammation in my body. So I do take oral fish oil, and I also take other oils. I take black cumin seed oil, which I've talked about in the past. It's a great plant oil that is anti-inflammatory and has thymoquinone in it, which is antimicrobial, and one of the things it was considered to be helpful in fighting COVID, that it helps to kill the COVID virus. So there's some studies on that. You can look that up. And I also take evening primrose oil. So I'm not taking any of these things right now because I'm having surgery on Friday. So anyway, all right. So I will talk to you about essential fatty acids when I come back in a couple of weeks. And so the week coming up, you're going to hear an encore from me. I'll make it something interesting. And then I'm going to leave you to it and wish me luck on my surgery. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am France Dorch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at France Dorch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.